Hey guys, and welcome back to the show. Today, our special guest, Wes, is not new to the podcast. We actually had him on our previous season. Wes, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Zach.
Awesome. I'm really glad to have you here for our second episode. Before we start talking about your progress and what you did before, can you just give an update to people who maybe don't know you or they forgot about your projects? What do you do and what kind of like content you create?
Sure. So my name is Wesley Jackson, or I go by Wes also by short, and I am the founder and CEO of Omega Digital, which is a digital marketing agency here in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. But my newest project is actually Surviving Humanity, which is a self-help podcast, first and foremost. And I am the co-founder of that alongside my best friend of 12 years now, Andrew Gilley. And we are primarily creating self-help content, personal development content, both in podcast form, through our YouTube channel, blog articles, and ultimately culminating in a book, hopefully within the next 12 months.
That's awesome. It seems like since the last time we spoke, you have a lot of stuff on your plate, right? Can you walk us through that transition and what made you kind of go this way?
Yeah, so around the time, shortly, let's say like 6 months before January 2020, so about halfway through 2019, I finally became disillusioned enough and tired enough of my digital marketing work and the, let's call it, professional corporate world that I was interacting in. And I knew that this work that I was doing was not ultimately what I'm here to do, essentially. It wasn't fulfilling. I liked helping people. I liked helping people grow their business and help them build better brands. But the digital aspect of it was a bit too far removed for my taste from the actual human side of things. And so I found myself to be quite isolated and too far removed from actually interacting with other humans. And I felt like I could do a lot more if I were to do something on my own and build my own brand instead of helping other people build theirs. I felt like I had done enough work in that realm at that point where I was satisfied enough to begin something new. And that was just a feeling and idea at that point. And I sat with that for much longer than I should have, honestly, for another about year and a half to 2 years almost. Fast forward to July of 2021, I was going back to the US from Vietnam, and I knew it was time to start something new. It was a time of both physical and existential transition where I was going back to my home country after being, you know, 5 years abroad ever since I came out of university almost. And it just felt like the time was right to do something different. And it also seemed like in terms of what the world needed at this time, that this was the right thing to do. I feel like people need a lot of help and guidance, and there's not enough of it out there right now in this world as it is. And that I was essentially answering what felt like a call to leadership at the end of the day. And this was the way that I felt that I could best do that, which was by creating self-help or personal development content in a variety of formats.
Talking about formats, can you tell us a bit about which platforms are you mostly focused on?
So the podcast comes first and foremost. And so that's going to primarily be focusing on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as the two largest shares of the podcast market. Second to that is our blog articles, which are hosted on our website and also on medium.com. And then the YouTube channel kind of works in tandem to that as a provision of the visual aspect of things. So we understand that everyone learns differently. Everyone has a different kind of preference for how they consume and learn. And we wanted to kind of tackle and, you know, hit all of our bases at the same time. So we've got audio learning, visual learning, and written, you know, reading learning. So those are the big three that we are focusing on.
And in terms of the podcast itself, can you tell us a bit about like the content of the episodes that you do and the format? Is it like an interview? Is it like self-hosted? Like what kind of format are you guys working with?
So I knew when we were starting out, I didn't want to just take the same path that everyone else seems to, where it's just one format and then they stick to it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to keep things a bit more dynamic, and I wanted to be able to dive even deeper into concepts than you can within the span of just one interview. And so because of that, we are focusing on keeping all of our episodes to only 30 minutes maximum, but we will be following this kind of path. So it begins first with a monologue each month as week number one. Week number two is a conversation between us, the co-hosts, myself and Andrew. Number three is where we interview a featured guest each month who is either an expert on the topic of the month, or they have some sort of insightful, profound, or important story to tell that can help teach people on that specific topic. And then number four, at the end of each month, is where we will read our email newsletter and highlight the most important aspects of that month in terms of our blog articles that we produced and in terms of whatever research or findings that we have, both through our own research online and through what we learned with the special guest each month.
Okay, that's really a lot of variety, right? Well, I want to ask you about the in terms of like the podcast itself, what made you go with video? So you could just go audio, right? So and you're a branding guy, so what's the reason for that?
Yeah, so I wanted to hit all of our bases. And so I know that not everybody learns best through podcasts. I'm actually one of those people. I don't actually listen to podcasts that much at all. And I actually also don't really watch YouTube videos to learn either. I'm much more of a reader. But I know that especially in this day and age, a lot of people really like to learn on YouTube in particular. They like to take video courses as well. And I wanted to be able to supply everyone out there as much as possible in terms of what they need to best learn. And I know that it's not always just through an audio format. And then also couple with that, the fact that video consumption just continues to trend upwards year over year. You've got, you know, the proliferation of YouTube and then also now TikTok with short form video and, you know, reels on Instagram and Facebook, shorts on YouTube. It's just where we seem to be heading more and more deeper into video. So I just felt like it was the best of both worlds from a business strategic standpoint, as well as from giving our audience what they want.
That's awesome, because I actually agree with you. Like video is a really important component for any medium now, especially because with your format, like the podcast, you're going to have guests, you're going to have, you know, the subject is, mostly self-help and personal development. So you have some emotional aspects that might not get through the audience with audio, but visually they can see that. So I agree. Wes, can you tell us a bit about the process for creating the podcast, like in terms of the software, the tools you use, and also maybe some platforms like Riverside?
Yep. So we also record using Riverside.fm. In my opinion, it's the best for remote video podcasts in particular. And since that's what we are doing 100% of the time, it just worked best for us. And on top of that, we also use Descript because I find that to be the easiest way to quickly edit as opposed to using something like Adobe Premiere, for example, or traditional video editing and production tools. Descript works excellently for myself in particular, because like I said, I learn through reading, mm-hmm. and I'm a much better reader than I am a visual learner. So being able to edit using words and having it affect the video timeline itself is just so powerful for me in particular. We also use Canva to create our social media content in terms of visuals. And yeah, that's about it. Those are the big three.
Yeah, those are the software things. Well, what about the hardware and the setup that you have now?
Oh, okay. I'm a huge Rode fanboy. So my mic is a Rode Procaster. Mm-hmm. And I use Focusrite Scarlett 8i6 for the USB audio interface. I use a cloud lifter to help power this mic because it draws a lot of power. A Logitech 4K webcam for the moment until I eventually invest in a mirrorless camera specifically mm-hmm. for recording. These lights that you see on me are from LoomCube. And that's about it in terms of hardware.
Okay, so did you actually have an idea about your setup before you started, or it was just like, you know, gathering stuff and then it turned out to be this way?
Yeah, I'm definitely a huge investigator and researcher. So mm-hmm. before we even several months before we ever started recording anything at all, I already knew exactly which components I wanted to buy because I did all the research up front beforehand in determining what was the, you know, quote unquote, best products within each category, mainly in terms of perceived value. And so this is what I ended up going with.
And it looks great, by the way.
I love it. Thank you.
Wes, can you tell us about your content creation day and how it looks like? Like, you wake up in the morning, you have a podcast guest, or you have an episode with your partner. How would that day look like, basically?
So at the moment, since we're still largely in pre-production phase, it is a lot of reading for me right when I wake up. That's just been my habit for the last several years now. So I like to research and read latest news, articles, trends within the podcasting industry itself. I will try to research best practices and see if I can generate any new ideas, because once we launch, there's no going back, and I know that. So I want to have as much as possible prepared beforehand in terms of strategies and content formats before we actually launch. And so that requires a lot of research and getting these strategic ducks in a row, so to speak.
Wes, when you talk about research and reading, so it's around the subject of podcasting or about the subject, you know, matter of the actual episode? Is it like the outside or the inside?
Actually, podcasting itself. So the inside, okay. Like a meta learning. Mm. Yeah. So I'm trying to see what other people do to expand the reach and awareness of their shows, organically speaking, and trying to learn from best practices from a variety of different sources out there within the podcasting world. And then I try to combine that with what I already know about digital marketing and branding in particular. And then I try to come up with kind of innovative approaches to what people are already doing out there.
That's great. You're more flexible in terms of the kind of content you create, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like that's the first part, right? Reading and going about, you know, grasping new information about the podcasting realm. Well, what about the actual process of creating the podcast? Or having an interview, like how do you go about, you know, getting yourself ready for it psychologically, maybe even physically? Is there something that you do during the day? Because the reason I'm asking about this is I have some content creation days and I have other days that are not for content creation. And there's a big contrast of the things I do and the habits and the routines.
Yeah, I take a very fluid approach to it. I don't structure my days so much.
I see.
I let my mind take the lead pretty much. So whatever I feel like working on, I will work on that day. And I only have the luxury of that because we're still in, you know, pre-production phase. So in terms of actually recording episodes, which I have done already now, we actually use a template that my partner and I created together in terms of a questioning format. And we designed this in such a way that we're able to draw out really coherent yet concise stories from each of our guests. And we do this by actually following like the three-part narrative structure, you know, which is famous from books, actually. And we found it to work really well because we actually tested it on ourselves with our very first launch episode, which is where we just tell our own stories. And we told those stories by answering the questions within our own format that we designed.
Oh, okay.
And it worked really well. And then I just filmed our second episode recently, and I asked for feedback from the guest, and he said he wouldn't change anything about it. So, I mean, so far we're, you know, two for two with a very small sample size, but I'm feeling pretty confident about the ability of this question template to draw out powerful stories from a variety of situations.
For someone who's not familiar with the tree narrative, you know, technique that you just talked about, can you describe it for us a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, you basically have that like setting exposition phase, which is number one. You describe the characters, describe who they are, what they're doing. Number two, there's always some sort of conflict. Number three, you resolve the conflict. Mm-hmm. So kind of, you know,
exposition. Basically, most of the popular stories are based on this, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's your standard story format pretty much. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to take that and apply it to a podcasting format because I know at the end of the day, a story is much more engaging than a lecture. And we hope to be able to provide both at the same time within this context. And so I had to think of a way to do that while still maintaining our audience's interest and attention throughout an entire 30-minute episode. And the best way to do that, in my opinion, is with the narrative.
That's really great. And I love the fact that you're trying to find innovative ways to do this, because I've been following some self-help or, you know, personal development podcasts, and most of them, they follow the same approach, the same format. And after a while, I'm not going to lie, it gets boring or just the same information, but different packaging. I want to get back to this idea of like creating innovative, you know, formats for your podcast. What part of the podcasting industry that, especially in the self-help realm, you find a bit tedious, is the same thing that it just for you made sense to go this way or be innovative? Is there some examples, no naming names, but just like the formats that you find a bit like not doing great for people in terms of grasping their attention and actually giving them value?
Yeah, so you touched on it a little bit there, where it can get a bit stale if all you're hearing is advice all the time. You can get into a kind of information overload state. So, you know, kind of like when you're in school, right? And you're having to take notes on the teacher's, you know, presentation, and you can't take notes fast enough because they're just throwing so much information at you all at once that it just overloads your brain, and then you end up learning nothing at all. I don't ever want that to happen. So I find it best to teach through a comprehensive, coherent story. And that's why we designed the podcast in that way, because I find with a lot of podcasts within the what's called the self-improvement subcategory out there to be a bit vague and thus sometimes not as relatable or applicable. And so I find it best to pull specific stories, in this case, around someone surmounting obstacles within their life. And usually I want to focus on just one story in particular. And so that's why when we ask our guests these questions before they come onto the show, we have them actually fill out a Google form and answer these questions themselves and actually put, you know, proverbial pen to paper so that they can actually form that story as well in their mind. And they come into this episode prepared to tell some sort of coherent story in particular, rather than giving vague or general advice.
Awesome. And I think, is this something that you did not find in the podcast that maybe you listen to? So you already said that you don't listen to podcasts. So I'm trying to figure out, like, how did you find this gap? So the reason I'm asking this is because whenever there's some kind of innovative solution or product, it comes from maybe somebody watching, let's say, YouTube videos, and they say, oh, wait, this topic is not really covered. And then they fill that gap, or they listen to podcasts and they're like, this is not the right way to do it. And they fill the gap. So how did you get into that? So that's my question, like finding this gap or innovative way.
So for me, it was actually based off of my own personal experience with public speaking, since that is also an audio learning format combined with visual, mind mm-hmm. you. But that was some feedback that I was getting over time throughout my public speaking appearances, both in person and on podcasts as a guest. I kept asking people for feedback, and most of the time it revolved around getting better at storytelling in particular, because I can, you know, sit up here all day long and hand out advice like candy, but you eventually become deaf to it because, like I said, you just get overloaded with information so much that it just kind of shuts down your brain, and you only really pull maybe one or two things away from a conversation at the end of the day like that. Whereas people tend to remember stories far better than they do information without any sort of context applied to it. And so I learned that after these many appearances and asking for feedback, that it's best to teach using story as the vehicle for said teaching.
I love what one guy said. I forgot his name, but he said the unspoken advice is the best kind of advice. And I think it definitely applies in your case. Is that something that you feel in the self-help podcast? You know, generally like the self-improvement, like books and public speaking realm, do you feel that it's a bit, there's a lot of push to get people to do stuff, and there's not a lot of like connection between the audience and whoever is giving advice. Do you feel that's something that's happening in the self-help realm? Because I feel that, you know, that especially now there's a lot of gurus, there's a lot of like, you know, self-help advice out there, but it just feels too rushed or too forced on people. It's the same, like I said, people read one or two books, Think and Grow Rich or like other books, and they just repackage the same information. But there's also this lack of connection between, like you said, between the audience and whoever is speaking with the stories, with the relatable kind of content. What do you think about this in terms of the industry? Maybe it's a hot topic. I don't know.
So I think one issue that I see a lot within the self-help niche is this kind of one-size-fits-all advice giving, which isn't really tailored to the person. And this is why I think that the narrative approach is the most powerful, because it's the most relatable. Anytime someone reads a story, each individual will pull something different out of it that relates to themselves as a person. Where on the other side, if you're only handing out information without context or without like a why or a moral mm-hmm. of the story, you don't really make that connection for your audience as to why this information that you are teaching them is important, not just on an individual level, but on a societal level as well. I find it harder for people to retain that information as an end result. So you can, you know, give someone the keys to the castle, so to speak, but they're not always going to know how to turn it. And I don't think you can actually hand them this instruction manual on how to turn those metaphorical keys either, because each person has their own path to walk in life. And that looks different on an individual level for each and every person on this earth. Only they know how to actually walk that path. They're the ones that have to do it. You can just give them some guidance along the way in the form of this self-help content. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's up to the person themselves to walk their own path. You can't do it for them. You know, you can't move their feet for them, so to speak.
I can totally relate to this because I was really involved in this self-help, you know, what, let's say self-help niche, like you said, in terms of like consuming a lot of content in my early days, especially after graduating. And it was just overwhelming. And of course, I ended up not doing much of those things that they said you should do, because it felt like it's not part of my story. It's like I'm forcing myself to do something. And the funny thing about this is that the habits that I developed to, let's say, be successful or to have a good routine in my life came from the unspoken advice, came from people that I, let's say, listen to their story. And they're not really in the self-help, you know, niche. They're just people, right? Talking about their life. And you're like, oh my God, that's really something I can relate to. And it just sticks with you for a long time because it's a human connection thing. It's not just like information. We're not processing this like a computer. So there's this kind of heart part of it that I feel is really important. And I think with your podcast, a lot of people will find so much value with this. So I'm really excited to listen to more of those episodes.
Me too.
So Wes, I want to talk about your experience in general. Can you tell us about your biggest failure and success when it comes to your business, but also your content creation and life in general? And what did you learn from them, of course?
So I'd say my biggest failure was when I failed to realize how important promotion is as opposed to just pure creation. And this was something that I learned after my student organization back in university. I didn't do enough promotion of what we had achieved and accomplished on a public level. So no one actually really knew about just how much we accomplished despite all odds against us. And so that's when I really realized, you know, the whole phrase, like, if you build it, they will come, mm-hmm. is not necessarily correct. I think it's really important for you to let people know what you have built rather than just building something great. So
maybe it's true for a birthday cake or something like that.
Yeah, if everyone knows it's your birthday, that'll work.
Yeah.
But this is especially applicable in the content creation realm too, because you'll see this kind of really honestly, in my opinion, lazy advice thrown around all the time where people just tell you, just create great content. Just mm-hmm. keep creating great content and eventually things will just work out. I feel like that is not correct whatsoever because there is so much more strategy and nuance now that is required in order for people to actually find that content, because we live, you know, in the digital age at this point, and there is so much noise out there as a result of that. And it only increases day by day. You know, we only get more and more people creating content as each day goes by. And so because of that, you have a lot of people out there creating really great things. So how do you actually find out about these great things? You know, there's word of mouth, there's social sharing, but there's also a lot of strategy behind how these things actually get put in front of you that people don't, I think, realize or appreciate enough at the end of the day. And so that was a mistake that I made during my time with this student organization, where once I had to transition, you know, into the professional world and had to, you know, show what I had achieved, it was hard for me to do that because I had never really thought of it that way. I was just so focused on creating something great that I didn't spend enough time promoting that thing as an end result.
Yeah. And what was your biggest success?
I would also say that was my biggest success, okay. Though, on the flip side of that, on the other side of that coin, Mm-hmm. Yeah. USD Esports was the name of the student organization. It's now known as Torero Gaming. And it's existed for 9 years now. And so I expect it to hit 10, which to me is a testament to the fact that I was able to create something great, not just alone, mind you. I had a lot of great mm-hmm. people to help me. Andrew, actually, my partner and co-founder with Surviving Humanity, was one of those people. So he was there for all of it. He was my vice president. And yeah, it's just really amazing, honestly, and still just awe-inspiring to myself, because at that age, you know, you know, between 20 to 21, I didn't exactly know what I was capable of still. That was really my first true test mm-hmm. in the real world, so to speak, of my leadership abilities. My leadership abilities actually originated back with video games as well mm-hmm. when I was 12, with a game called MapleStory, and I was starting guilds in every video game that I played since then from the age of 12, leading up to USD Esports, when I finally created an organization out here in the real world. And it was just really amazing for me to see the fruits of my own efforts and see part of what I am capable of if I just set my mind to it. And if I have the passion that is able to drive me far enough, in addition to a strong support network, and just seeing how far that can take me, it was quite awe-inspiring for myself, and it was really inspirational. And it's really helped me on my journey as I continued to build things from there with, you know, Omega Digital and now Surviving Humanity. It really helps keep that flame, you know, lit.
And it's also, I believe, very important for building self-confidence, right? Well, especially after school, we are all kind of confused about what we should do in the world. And once you have an example, like a real example in your own experience, then you start to build up that confidence that you can actually achieve bigger things. So that's awesome. Wes, do you have any mentor or book or any, could be physical, could be a person, could be dead or alive, that really inspires you and you get your, let's say, your positive energy from?
Yeah. So the only mentors I've ever had are all old, dead philosophers. Okay. So
are we talking Greek philosophers?
Ancient Greek, uh-huh. But I think the number one for me is actually Chinese. And so mm-hmm. this is someone who, you know, is essentially a mythical figure. So a lot of people debate whether or not this person actually existed or whether it was just one person at all. And this is a Laozi, and he or they wrote what's called the Tao Te Ching, which is essentially one of the biggest books in Taoism, which is ancient Chinese philosophy. And so that has really helped me within recent years, in particular over the last 2 years, with maintaining a sense of natural balance between order and chaos, especially with such a fluid kind of lifestyle and schedule. I found it extremely important to be able to come back to this time and time again. And it's this ability to just be at ease with things, no matter what happens. And mm-hmm. I find myself gravitating time and time again to Taoism as a way of comforting myself and learning how to do that.
That's awesome. Any books or other things that inspire you?
Another book that helped me in particular was in the personal development realm, and it's called How the World Sees You by Sally Hogshead. This book was a huge catalyst for my personal development journey, because I always wanted to know kind of what other people would think of me, but I was always too afraid to ask, right? Mm. And so this book took a very different approach to the standard personality test. And instead, it's these 52, if I remember correctly, archetypes that are based on kind of the communication style that you have and what you put out there into the world, and thus what other people perceive you as. So in particular, mine was like the veiled strength. And so my primary language, so to speak, is mystique, and my secondary is power. And I found this test within the book to be highly accurate. And so it really helped me kind of produce more faith in personality tests as a result. And so I started to take more and more after that, as I kind of pieced together my identity as a result.
Yeah. And I believe those kind of books, when once they have an impact on you, it stays for a long time. Wes, is there something that you can tell us about your priming strategy? So I always love talking about priming, which is basically the idea of getting yourself to that high energy state of performance, of spiritual, peace, and also the state of creative energy. And it's really hard to get there sometimes, especially if we have a negative, toxic environment. So my question to you is, how do you get yourself there? And how do you protect that space, which is a big deal?
So for me, I'm hugely affected by sound. And so because of that, I use music in particular in order to change my moods. And so if I want to, you know, relax, I'll listen to some like nonverbal sound healing frequencies. If I want to kind of get myself into like the hype zone and kind of get myself to get into that open kind of social space, if I'm preparing for like a podcast, for example, like this, or for one of my events that I'm hosting, then I'll listen to my Endless Summer playlist that I've created, which is all kind of good vibes only, upbeat music, stuff like that. So I like to use music as a tool to modulate my emotions and feelings, I suppose, and regulate either down or up my own nervous system as a result. And because I really resonate with sound like that. And in terms of kind of overcoming this idea of like toxic environments, I find reading to be most helpful for that in particular. So I like to surround myself with positive media in particular. So I don't really read mainstream news whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I'll get, you know, bits and pieces from friends when they just feel like telling me things that are going on, but I don't really actively go and seek out what's going on out there in the world so much, because, you know, at the end of the day, there's only so much that we actually have control over. Mm-hmm. And I mean, ultimately, it's just our reaction to things.
I think, honestly, like as human beings, we're not supposed to know that. Like, you're supposed to know at least like the local community that you have, you know, the small problems that you have there. But to have all access to all the problems in the world and what's happening in real time, I don't think our brain honestly is capable of processing that. That's why we have those issues, like mental issues.
Yeah, you're definitely right. I mean, our, you know, brain is at the fundamental level not really set up to grasp these huge compound principles, because when you see large societal issues out there across the world, we have no idea where to start or begin with in terms of comprehending them, because, you know, it's just this giant, huge question mark at the end of the day that's made up of several thousand, countless other little question marks, because it's like this butterfly effect, right? You don't know what events led to a certain event happening. And there's just so much time in your day and so much attention and energy that you can give to these things that are happening in order to actually understand them, that, like you said, it just overwhelms you at the end of the day. It's just another form of information overload. And with news in particular, it's a huge channel for negative energy in particular, because, you know, nowadays news purely exists to, you know, drum up clicks for advertising. Yep. And so what gets clicks? Controversy.
Yeah.
And that's most often negative news. So people can't help but be glued to these screens when it's something that's negative or controversial, because it's just a natural human reaction. And, you know, news and media, they know that it's a strategy at the end of the day. And I think it's just one giant distraction and a channel for one's negative emotions, an unhealthy one, mind you, at the end of the day.
And we often forget that the news, they were not 24 hours before. There's like a section of the day, you get the news and that's it. But when you have like 24-hour news and filled with all the problems and the negative stuff, of course, if you watch that day in and day out, you're gonna have you're not gonna have that primed state. I'll tell you for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, you are already starting off on a bad foot, because if, you know, for example, like I said, I wake up every morning and I read. I'm not reading what's going on elsewhere out there in the world, because how is that helping me, basically? Yep. How is that helping me create content, for example? How is that helping me assume my best form so that I can help the world most I can? Consuming negative media is not going to get me to that.
Yeah, and I think it's really tough to take back that prime state or to get to it. So you want to protect it, and you want to really appreciate the effort it takes to get there. Wes, I want to ask you about specifically negative comments online. So have you ever had any experience with negative feedback creating content or on your platforms? And how did you deal with it? So I love to ask this question at the end, because it's one of the big problems for a lot of creators, is how to deal with other human beings online. We can create content, we feel good, we can publish stuff, but it's always that step where you don't know how to deal with other people online, and it can get wild, especially on the internet, that I think sometimes creates a lot of issues for creators in general.
So what I think is really important, first and foremost, is to always keep in mind that if it's on the internet and it's anonymous, so sometimes it's not, sometimes it is, depending on the platform. But in cases where it's anonymous feedback, there's always a lower filter. So people will just say things that they would never, ever say to somebody face to face.
Exactly.
And so that's always why it's important to take things with a grain of salt. And also to remember that a lot of the times when people say something, you know, like half of it is just a projection of their own inner world coming out through their spoken words. So a lot of the times that's just their own perspective of things. And then I think third on top of that, in terms of maintaining a positive mindset despite getting negative feedback, is to remember that these people do not necessarily know you at all. They only see one side of you. And that's like, you know, a very tiny tip of the iceberg in terms of who you are as a person at the end of the day. And it's really important to keep that in mind when you're getting feedback from strangers. But, you know, devil's advocate, it's always important to remain open as well to any kind of feedback, because there's always some sort of semblance or nugget of truth within most forms of feedback, as long as it's constructive criticism. If it's someone just trolling online, then it's perfectly okay to just ignore them.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to maintain this kind of balance between openness and kind of a resilient mindset that's able to deflect and just be at ease with the fact that, you know, at the end of the day, you will never, ever be able to please everybody, no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try. And I think it's really important to remember that at the end of the day in order to maintain your sanity as a content creator, someone who's putting themselves out there online or offline publicly. It requires a ton of bravery, self-awareness, and vulnerability at the end of the day in order to do that. And, you know, everyone might be capable of that at the end of the day, but not everyone is doing it, that's for sure. And so I think it's really important to have a level of self-respect for yourself and self-confidence as an end result, because people who are creating content and putting it out there into the world are doing something that is rare. The majority of the world, the majority of us, spend a lot of our time consuming content rather than creating it. And I think every content creator out there, no matter how big or small, needs to always remember that they're doing something special and they're doing something that's of service as well to the world around them, because you are providing something that people need at the end of the day.
That's awesome advice. So I don't have to ask you about what should you say to someone who's going to start, because I think this one is exactly what they need to hear. But I'm going to ask you anyway. can you tell us what would you do differently if you started today, which is basically an advice for somebody maybe who can relate to you and they want to start doing a podcast or they want to start creating content on different platforms. And I want to go back to that thing that you said in the beginning, like there was a gap between the ideas that you had and the moment you start to create. So it was a gap. I don't know. You can tell us more about it. Like, was it more about you felt you were not ready? Was it a psychological part? Was it like a location part? Maybe you were waiting for something to happen. And what really got you to actually start doing the podcast? So, and I think this one would be a great advice for somebody who's listening.
Yeah, so I think the biggest obstacle in most people's lives, circumstances aside, is themselves. You know, it's this idea of negative self-talk, the I can't, the I should, the I shouldn't, you know, do this, do that. It ends up leading to inauthenticity. And as a result, you end up not doing anything because all you're trying to do is fulfill other people's expectations. And so I think it's really important to tie back to why you're creating content as a content creator and to always have that in mind anytime you're producing something, because it really helps serve as that kind of guiding like lighthouse, mm-hmm. so to speak, that helps keep you steady on this path despite negative feedback, despite trolls, despite negative media. You're just surrounded by negativity at all times. But what's important is focusing on the positive side of things, because that is also always there at the same time. You just have to learn how to look for it and to sift out the negative kind of energy that's coming your way and magnetizing towards the positive. And so a lot of that has to do with mindset. It's really important to get this negative self-talk out of your head and realize that at the end of the day, the voice in your head is not really you. It's just a culmination of all of the other voices that you've heard in your life that have assimilated into one. And so this is why it's so important to kind of identify your core values and your strengths as a result, because the more you know yourself, the more steady you become, because your identity becomes a bit more concrete. And so if you know who you are, you can become more resilient as an end result and thus be able to stay on your own path that you know is the right one for you, instead of being led astray by all these different sources of information out there in the world that just continue to crop up every day. And so that's why I think the most important thing to remember is that you are the biggest obstacle in your life most of the time, and you have to learn how to get over yourself in order to get through these obstacles.
That was just beautifully said. I love it. And I think a lot of people will take value from this. Wes, what are your next projects and where can people find you?
So I've already spoken about Surviving Humanity. Mm-hmm. The next step for that is writing this book over the next year. And you can find us at survivinghumanity.net. And from there, you will be able to find our podcast, our YouTube channel, our blog articles. You can sign up for our email newsletter, and that's where you'll be able to stay up to date on any sort of news.
Thank you, Wes. And we're going to keep all the details in the show notes. I appreciate you coming back here for the second time. Hopefully we can do a third time and share your progress and your next project. So Wes, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Zach.
Absolutely. Pleasure. Guys, have a good one. Bye-bye.